But now I don't see those cobbles and curbs. I don't hear the blues anymore.
Rough Trade is giving away a third of the first 3 months of the Rough Trade Club plus new music membership exclusively to 101 Part-Time Jobs listeners. Become a member of Rough Trade Club New Music and you'll receive the Rough Trade Album of the Month straight to your door every month on exclusive vinyl pressing with exclusive bonus material. Club members have received exclusive pressings of albums from Sufjan Stevens, Sprints, The Last Dinner Party, Julie Byrne and Over Mono, just to name a few, this past year alone. Sign up using the promo code CLUB101POD and you'll get the Rough Trade Album of the Month, English Teacher's excellent debut album, This Could Be Texas, on exclusive Galaxy Gold for a third of the usual price. Here's English Teacher on a recent episode of 101.
How many opportunities do you get to write a debut album and have all of this, you know, support behind us? I don't know, I really like the idea of holding the bar as being like classic songs.
You only get one shot at a debut.
Don't want the album of the month but still want all the benefits? Sign up to the standard tier using Club101Pod and you'll still get the first month free. You'll also get free shipping on all orders, 10% off the bar and on secondhand vinyl in-store, and exclusive access to sold-out Rough Trade events. So don't hang around. Go to roughtrade.com/club and sign up with the code CLUB101POD. That's CLUB101POD, and claim money off the album of the month, English Teacher's This Could Be Texas, today. This offer's available to UK residents only. Do you play in bands? I did for the longest time. And I wish that I knew that DistroKid was a thing. I don't even think it existed back then. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of your royalties and earnings. 1 million+ artists rely on DistroKid to get their music on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all the major streaming services. When you get DistroKid, you can see a DistroKid bank and withdraw your earnings. You get notified when you've earned royalties and you can withdraw via the app. And you can even check your streaming stats on Spotify and Apple. Get 30% off your first year on DistroKid by going to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. 30% off for your first year. That's not bad. We know it's a tough world out there. Why don't you make it easier for yourself? And to get 30% off that free year as an artist, where you get 100% of your royalties and earnings, go to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. All right, stay with me. I'll be right back after this.
Wherever you are.
Hello, you're listening to 101 Part-Time Jobs. It's the podcast where I ask artists about the other side of what they do, their discipline, their self-organization, and perhaps the most trivial element of it all, working different jobs in order to keep going. On today's episode is Clara Mann, the excellent folk artist in London via Bristol. Her new EP, Stay Open, is out now, and I absolutely adore it. If you're into lovely, gliding folk, this EP is for you. Stay Open by Clara Mann. You can find it on Bandcamp and everywhere else online. I highly recommend it. Cheers to 2000 Trees for supporting the podcast. You can check out their amazing lineup at 2000treesfestival.co.uk. And if you want to get 20 quid off your ticket, you can use the voucher code 101POD at checkout. All right. Here's Clara Mann on 101 Part-Time Jobs. Go well.
I can go steady, babe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like you said, I don't really know if the hard times ever end. I guess they do. But they go on for quite a long time. But I mean, I do enjoy it. I like having balance in my life. I do work part-time. I've done lots of odd jobs. I've done candy floss selling at Glastonbury Festival. I've worked in galleries, museums. I'm currently looking after 3 tiny French children, so I'm a French nanny. And I love that. That's my favourite one so far, actually. It doesn't sound like the one that's most fun, but it actually is.
Is that because you can kind of be yourself and do lots of activities?
Yeah, and actually, so I mean, I wanted to use my French because I grew up in France and I'm bilingual, and I wanted to sort of practice it. So that was the main reason for going for the job. But obviously, it's something that has to be part-time and flexible because I do tour as well, and I also want to have room in my life to be able to prioritize music when I can. But what I really like about it is I feel like it brings out all the sides of me that the adult world and the music industry particularly don't leave room for. So, I mean, obviously I love making music and I love everything, well, most of the things that come with it. But getting to spend time with like the three-year-old I look after brings out like the gentleness and softness and peacefulness in me. And there just isn't time or room for that when you're pushing and grafting when it comes to music. And so it's really lovely to be able to spend time with those parts of myself. And I'm very grateful for it, actually. And it brings a different pace into my life, apart from, you know, the very fast pace of the industry.
Right. I mean, doing one thing all the time, I mean, that's going to take away. It makes me think that, you know, when you're into a good book, or whether you've got a good routine of reading, or maybe it's watching interesting films. Those are all things that you get stories from that you can be inspired by, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I do, apart from my jobs, you know, I do try to make time for those things, because like you say, that's where the creative stuff comes from. That's where my writing comes from, my inspiration, particularly reading and like looking at paintings. I love pictures. I love drawing. So I try to make room for those, but they're always the things that come last in a way, because they're not thought of as essentials. You know, I have to make money. I have to earn. I have to have my job. I really have to do music because that's my drive in my life, my passion. So then other things that sort of supplement that main passion tend to fall away when you're sort of pushing in both directions, financially, career-wise. And I'm trying at the moment to really make space for those. So setting aside time for myself. I'm not very good at it. I'm working on it. But I am trying to make time for those things. Like, one major thing that's happened in my life recently is I moved a desk from my room into our living room, which is where I'm sitting right now, so that me and my housemate could both do our drawing and painting and have somewhere like light and lovely to do it. And it's only been a week, but it really has made a massive difference to my life. Just those little things, like prioritizing them for once.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so interesting that, you know, when you say those are non-essential things, I mean, that really puts it into perspective. Because I mean, those tiny experiences that you have, I imagine, you know, would it be fair to say that when you're writing, you know, these experiences you have, they're not experiences that you were expecting. You know, they weren't in your diary. They weren't like, okay, I'm going to do that today.
No,
things that catch you by surprise.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, when you're on the bus and you write something down, that's such a classic one. I know so many musicians have their notes apps open on the bus and things like that. It is the things that surprise you and that you just happen to catch out of the corner of your eye. I think there's definitely, you know, I was definitely someone for a long time who felt that, oh, I'm sort of powerless in the songwriting process. Things come to me. I have to wait for them. I just have to remain open to them and hope they come along, this kind of magic inspiration. Actually, although part that is definitely part of the songwriting process for me, I think I don't want to be someone who just waits for things to come to me. I do want to also push myself. And I think about like visual artists who have a practice every day whereby they sketch, or writers who write every day, even if it's not, you know, going to amount to anything long term. Establishing a practice is really, really helpful. And so I'm trying to do that at the moment. And with that comes obviously like making the space to write physically, like I was talking about the desk and things like that. And I'm really enjoying that because it makes me feel less out of control in the songwriting process.
Yeah. It sounds like there must be some kind of trade-off of control, because you want to be able to have that discipline in place. Yet leave a bit of headroom for
absolutely, yeah,
abstract thought or whatever it might be.
Of course, yeah. And those are the things. I think it's more about like creating a space where those things, where you are ready to receive those things. So like a peaceful physical space, making time for those. Because if I don't, I'm just busy all the time. I'm not even leaving room in my head for those things to come to me. So making the time and having a practice in the way I was just talking about, that has been really helpful. Just making room and prioritizing writing for once.
I've just gone freelance again. And, you know, for the first few days, I was amazed that I had this many hours in the day. and then very quickly, I thought, oh, shit, you know, I want to drill that wall. I want to put that frame up. I need to go to the shop to get dinner.
Yeah.
That stuff can really stretch out, can't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's really, you need to give yourself hours. You know, you need to give yourself a timeline.
Yeah, I think it's also, you know, I do find it helpful to have a kind of patchwork of things that come into my life. So whether they're creative things like drawing or reading or writing words down rather than just songs, like the combination of those things I do find inspiring. And I sometimes think that if I mean, obviously I would love to have the opportunity to just focus on writing sometimes, but it is nice to have inspirations coming from different places. And even like we say, there's unexpected things. So like spending time with the kids that I nanny for can be really inspiring sometimes and energizing, especially if I'm feeling depleted in my creative process. It's really nice to have energy from them bouncing back to me. And so I don't mind having different things going on as long as one of them doesn't become too dominant over the writing.
Has it taken you a little while to work that out? I mean, when did you start writing?
I started writing about 3 years ago, I guess.
Oh, wow. Did you sort of turn the ratchet of that quite quickly, of putting that discipline in place and thinking about it? I mean, for a lack of a better phrase, you know, thinking about it like an adult, you know, trying to be organized about it.
I think from the moment I started to take it seriously as like, okay, I think this might be a career thing for me rather than just something I do on the side, then it became really important to have some discipline around it. But to be honest, I mean, I think I am someone who likes having lots of things on the go. And like I said, I find that energizing. So I don't think I wanted to stop doing all the other things. I just wanted to make them make sense. And I always felt that the songwriting was the thing that actually drew things together. So I love words, I love reading, I love writing things down. And that feeds into my songwriting. I love pictures. I love painting. I love going to galleries. And there are definitely pictures that come into my songs. You know, I'm quite a visual person. So in a way, this was sort of the thread that tied everything together and became the dominant strain, as it were, rather than my eliminating all the other things to make room for it. They all just fed into each other in the songwriting and came together.
3 years ago is kind of yesterday in the context of everything, right? Did you have anything before writing music that filled that creative space?
I mean, I was, you know, I'm only 21 and I was 18 when I started writing. So until then, I thought that I was either going to go to art college or maybe go to university and go into I wanted to follow a sort of curation route with art history and French. I had a place, I had it all set up. I was going to go to university. And then a month before, I was like, maybe I'll try and be a rock and roll star instead.
Brilliant.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Probably quite reclusive. I had like close friends, but I didn't really go out a lot in my teens. I was quite studious. I did spend a lot of time drawing and painting. I mean, I also spent a lot of time probably being silly with friends like a normal teenager.
it's good for you. That's good for the heart.
It's important. I definitely was very creative and I had friends who were also very creative. So we did those things together. It just sort of carried on. It made sense. But it was a real surprise because I only started writing when I was like, just before I turned 18, maybe that year. So it was, and it just sort of happened and came out of the blue. And I was like, oh, I really like doing this actually. And I'd always been musical, you know, I was trained as a classical pianist. I did grades. I taught piano. And I liked doing all that, but I had quite a traditional background in it. I'd never played the guitar. I'd never written songs. And I just started going to a lot of DIY gigs where I was living at the time, which was in Bristol. And I'd get the bus into town with a friend and we'd go to like whatever was on. And so I started becoming interested in like grassroots music. And my friends were writing and playing and doing shows. And I was like, oh, that looks fun. Maybe I'll try that. Yeah. And I wrote a couple of songs just on my guitar and sort of had fun with it. And I put them on my Bandcamp. I made a Bandcamp. And it was just on my social media profile. The link was there. It was really just for fun. And then people seemed to like it and people asked me to play shows. And then I got picked up by Sag Club Records, who released my first EP just through social media. They found me and they put out the EP about a year later. So it was really something that sort of came out of the blue, but then made so much sense when it happened. And as soon as I started putting aside time for it and enjoying it, I realized how exciting it was and how much I wanted to do more of it. And here I am doing this.
I mean, I think it's incredibly inspiring when you can find something and then create your own future out of it. If you see what I'm saying, you know, you can see your future, you can see a direction, you can see what other artists that you may or may not sound like, you know, the direction, the route that they've gone on.
Totally. I think it's just so different to doing, you know, I had such a conventional route planned out for myself and I was really sure of it. And, you know, it was arty, but it was, I wanted to go to university and then I'd go and do a job. Great route as well. Absolutely wouldn't have worked for me. I'd have been really all over the place with it. And I always say that, like, when you're in a creative career or even when you're self-employed, it's kind of like you're making it up as you go along a bit. And I think that is obviously risky sometimes, a bit scary, but it is exciting. And I always feel like I'm sort of, rather than following a path, I'm sort of rolling one out in front of myself as I go along and trying to step on it.
Yeah. Is that... how far ahead can you look? Because I suppose with, in terms of pragmatic stuff, you know, it takes a few months to get the EP on DSPs. And then if you're doing physical, obviously that brings its own. But you know, for your own sort of creativity and planning, how far do you tend to look ahead, really? And do you tend to try and put, you know, it sounds a bit crude to say, but goals or, you know, like particular milestones for yourself?
I try to write regularly. That's the thing I'm really invested in, is like the writing process, especially at the moment. You know, I've just released this EP. I'm trying to write as much as possible. And again, talking about that practice and being committed to that. I try not to set goals for myself that are too challenging because I think music and anything creative is so unpredictable. You could exceed your goals by so much or fall short of them, or completely different things could come up that you hadn't even seen coming. So what I try to do is just be really hopeful and open and invest in my own creative process and invest in the people around me who are helping me do that, whether it's my team or whether it's my friends and the people who support me every day. I try to invest in, like, in making it a good life right now and being good to myself so that I can keep writing and keep working and that's sustainable. You know, this is something that I want to do long term. That's my goal, is to keep doing this for a very long time. And that just means building really strong foundations and feeling good in what I'm doing. And I think often if you push yourself too hard, then you burn out, and I don't want to do that. Sorry, there's a little cat here called Bon Jovi who's come to visit.
As a cat, I thought it might have been one of the French kids you were looking after. Great. What you just talked about there, that's something that we're reading a lot about. It's something that we're hearing a lot about. You know, a balance of a career in music and being an artist at large. Mm. I mean, do you think that now is quite a good time to be an artist? Because there it doesn't seem, there's certainly not governmental support really there for you or us. But it is in society. You know, we're reading articles in magazines and newspapers about that balance. You know, do you think now's a quite good time to take a step back, especially after COVID and bands not being able to tour and regaining perspective?
I guess I can only talk about it from a personal point of view, is that I, you know, my experience of music is that you push yourself very hard. So whether that's physically or emotionally, there is no room for vulnerability. And that's what I was talking about earlier, you know, getting to spend time with, in other parts of my life, being soft and gentle. That's not something that I really feel is possible in the music industry. I'm very lucky to have an incredibly supportive team and I really love them. And, you know, we try and make it as good as possible. But it is hard to be vulnerable. And particularly when it comes to touring, you know, it's financial pressure. You're pushing yourself to the absolute limits, physically, or I definitely am, and emotionally, and you can't stop. You just have to keep going. And I find that challenging. And it makes me think, you know, about, I think that the music industry can potentially be not a very inclusive place. People who are less physically able, for instance, or anyone who has any kind of vulnerability, either physically or mentally, that's really tough to do this. And I think that's what we're seeing at the moment, is people just refusing to push themselves beyond breaking point. And I think that's really healthy to see people stopping that culture or trying to, but we have a long way to go yet. You know, the fact that there is no governmental support means it's actually not possible to tour healthily for a lot of people, because you're on a tiny little budget and venues are on a small budget. So, I mean, that's the reality of it. That said, I'm not trying to be down on it, because touring is also incredibly exhilarating and beautiful and exciting and I love it. But there is that side to it that I think is not often acknowledged, or is only starting to be acknowledged publicly now.
There's a slither of this conversation that isn't woe is me or woe is you, but is like, you know, looking at like the reality, because I suppose for so many people, the music industry is, so many musicians are willing to work for free, you know, and to lose money on tour just to get the exposure. Now that's a word that we hear a lot. And so to be able to have some, you know, self-awareness, perhaps respect for yourself, you know, to be able to see yourself of what you are. I mean, that was something that I struggled with a few years ago playing, because I'd just take every opportunity and not think about myself, really. Mm. And that does come out in the end, really, doesn't it? I mean, it sounds like you're being very sensible.
I'm also, like I said, my team are incredibly supportive. I'm very lucky to have that. I know that's not always the case. They are very respectful of my boundaries. I'm lucky in that way.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much, Clara. This is great. I absolutely love the EP.
Oh, thank you so much.
you got such an amazing voice, such an amazing sound. I think now is a really lovely time for quiet stuff. How was Pitchfork the other day?
Oh, Pitchfork was wonderful. It was at the end of the tour, so I was quite tired. I got back from Glasgow the day before to London. And I think it just also felt like quite an emotional show. You know, the hometown show is quite a big deal. It was Pitchfork. That was a big deal. A lot of friends I hadn't seen in a long time and people I wasn't expecting to come came to the show, which was overwhelming and lovely. And I think I felt a little bit vulnerable on stage, and I'm not someone who gets nervous at all anymore playing. And sometimes it's quite nice to have that slight edge or fragility to a performance. I think it adds an intensity to it for both performer and audience. And, you know, you're singing emotional songs and pieces of yourself that you're putting out there. It's right that it be a little bit vulnerable. It'd be false to pretend anything else. So it's really beautiful to share that with a really attentive, respectful audience. You know, it was a really wonderful experience for me.
Great to hear. Brilliant. And I absolutely see that. You know, it's like when you're speaking to a close friend, or, you know, saying something, you know, when you give a part away of yourself, for me, that's kind of one of the most special moments of life in life, really. And and that is what you get from the amazing records. You know, you feel like someone's telling you a secret.
Yeah, it's intimate. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Well, thank you so much. I mean, just to end with, I'm putting you on the spot here, but I'm quite a big fan of work gaffes, you know, kind of making mistakes at work. I mean, like, I've always been one who makes mistakes every week. You know, I always kind of fuck things up. Does anything come to mind, like any funny stories or moments or anecdotes you might find yourself telling friends?
I'm trying to think. When I was on tour in May with Daniel Ross, and we did a European tour, and I was opening for him each night, which was a wonderful, incredible tour, really a big adventure. We played quite a weird show in Turin, in this like round church on the outskirts of Turin. And I had to get back to the place I was staying in the centre of town. And so I asked the venue to call me a cab, because obviously they don't have Uber there, something I should have thought about. Very nice person did. And the cab driver arrived, I got in, I had my guitar and my stuff, and I was going to a little apartment where some friends I didn't know, but like friends of friends, were hosting me. And it was on sort of, I guess, about a half hour from where the venue was. Anyway, the taxi driver was super nice to me. And then he asked me, are you staying in a hotel? Are you staying with friends? And I was like, I'm staying with friends. And also worth mentioning, the whole time, because I speak French, I was pretending to be French because I'm terrified of being taken for granted as an English person, because they take one look at you and they're like, this woman is a foolish English woman.
Yeah, classic.
So pretending to be French, doing all this. And I got out and I checked the meter, and it said about 23 euros. And I got out and he said, that'll be 60 euros. And I was like, no, it won't. It's 23. I've just seen. He was like, that'll be 60 euros. And he could see my purse in my hand, and it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. I had all my stuff on the side of the road, and I was in the middle of nowhere on the outskirts of the city with no one. And he was just like, that's going to be 60 euros. And he started moving towards me, and I was like, just take 60 euros, you can have it. So it was what I would describe as a very gentle mugging. and then I had to find my way into the apartment and everything in the dark, not speaking any Italian. Anyway, bit of a nightmare. Here I am to tell the story.
I'm so sorry. That sucks. Okay.
You live and you learn. That's tour life. That's rock and roll, as I like to say.
That is rock and roll. Cheers, Clara.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely to speak.
So there was Clara Mann on 101 Part-Time Jobs. Her EP, Stay Open, is out now. Hopefully she'll be playing some shows in London and the UK in general. Looking forward to that. See you next week for a new episode. Here's Cox Barrow. I've been working all day, bumming mate on the side, running around like a blue ass fly. I've been working, yeah, I've been working all day, bumming mate. Every blink of me, I've been on the go, up and down the ladder like a fiddler's elbow. I've been working. This is a Mighty Moon Media podcast.